We did have a chat organised with Christopher Clary, who's been good enough to join us, New York Times journalist, and he's for a long time written about history and the greatness of this great game of tennis. I think he's written a book on the Davis Cup that you can catch as well, and it's good to have a New York Times journalist to give us a perspective on this whole Novak Djokovic situation that is from outside of Australia. So let's have a chat to Christopher, as we promised we would do, and then we'll head back to your calls for more Midday Matters, I promise. Christopher, thanks a lot for your time, and I appreciate you joining me.
Hey, Dwayne, great to be with you.
All of us are invested in this story in a biased way, in a way, in that we're either Victorians, like I have, so I've lived in the state for 2 years. You know, we're Australian to see international players like Rafael Nadal and the F1 drivers who want to come to Australia, and they're happy to be double vaxxed. We've got the situation in Australia where, as you know, 93% of Australians right now are willing to be vaccinated, not just for their own health and safety, but for the country's betterment as well. But we've been living in this Australian lockdown environment for a while, and probably haven't really liked Novak Djokovic for a while either, even before COVID hit. So can you give us a perspective from an international view, if you can? How should we be viewing this?
Well, look, Dwayne, I mean, this has been a brewing storm for quite a long time. And I feel it's interesting because, you know, really in some ways it mirrors the experience that we had in the States, you know, during the pandemic and the first year of it in 2020 when Novak came to the U.S. Open. So a lot of those feelings that Australians were feeling were kind of already in place there, even though the vaccination campaign wasn't really going at that point. He'd had this disastrous exhibition tournament that he organized over in the Balkans that just really went wrong for him, and positive test, super spreader event. He was very cagey about vaccination even then. You know, this is more than a year ago. And so there was a lot of ambivalence about him in the U.S. at that point that, you know, led to, I did a big interview with him then. He was kind of trying to clear the air before the tournament. I don't think he cleared it all. And basically he's had a lot of opportunities to change tack here. The fact that he hasn't shows the kind of stubbornness and, you know, maybe strength of will that he has, but also it was a pretty calculated risk. And to be honest, it really backfired on him and the sport. And of course, he wasn't the only one at fault here from my perspective. I mean, obviously, as an outsider, having a lot of admiration for Australia and the way the country's run and the people, I was very surprised there were these mixed signals about whether he needed to have an exemption or not, or if he even could have an exemption. It was very surprising to me. I'm sure surprising to some Australians too. But this is definitely on the lack of communication and the lack of clarity from Novak as well, coming into this whole event, and we saw it in New York already.
So if it was the US Open being played this week and not the Australian Open, would he be allowed to be there playing?
Look, our situation in some ways is similar to yours right now. I mean, it just changed in December. You know, Joe Biden, our president, and his administration basically restricted access to the US if you're not vaccinated, unless you're a citizen or a green card holder, which is a resident, or an immigrant. So Novak wouldn't qualify in any of those things. They are allowing exemptions, and a bit like Australia, it's not entirely clear how strict they're going to be about it. But he would definitely need a pretty serious exemption to get into the U.S. This year, and he's got big tournaments coming up. Dwayne, he's got the Indian Wells tournament in Miami in March, which he's been dominant at in the past. He's got the U.S. Open in September. There may be exemptions for big events, like they're talking about in France for the French Open. Maybe he might get one of those, but he's going to need special care and treatment just to keep playing on the big events in the sport.
Do you think in a decade's time, when he wins another Grand Slam or two, that he will be looked back on as the greatest of all time? Or will his persona always have this asterisk over him where we'll say, oh, but we love Federer better, we love Nadal more, we love McEnroe more, if you can believe that. Is there always going to be that?
I got to tell you, it's really interesting to me now, Dwayne, because this situation here really is pivotal, what happened in the last 11 days in Australia, because I felt like things were just starting to turn a little bit for him at the U.S. Open last year. He was going for the Grand Slam, trying to, you know, match Laver 52 years later. He fell just short. It was very emotional. The U.S. Open crowd, which has been pretty negative about him, to be honest, Dwayne, over the years, really kind of turned in his favor. I think they saw him a bit as a sentimental figure for the first time, and they had a lot of empathy for him, a lot of good vibes in that tournament. So now he's coming into this season. He's carrying some political capital there, and then this happens. So, and he's 34 years old, almost 35. I just don't know if he's got time to turn the image thing around at this point. I think it's pretty baked in at this stage. And I think no matter what, down the road, this event, that happened here, this series of things that occurred because of this very special and sad time in history that we're in. I think it's going to stick with him. It's going to be impossible to shake entirely.
Do you think it worries him? He is who he is. I mean, he's the master of his own. He's writing his own book. I mean, he could have been vaxxed if he wanted to be. So he, I know the kerfuffle that happened when he got to Australia wasn't all of his doing, but in some ways, if he was vaxxed, it wouldn't have happened. So do you think it's going to knock him around at all, or do you think that his iconic status will always be there and he'll just say, hey, I was who I was and, you know, I've still made lots of money and there's still been a lot of backers who've backed me financially and been proud to sponsor me?
Look, Dwayne, you know, as we say in the U.S., he's a tough cookie, this guy. He's been through more than any other real top player, top, you know, big three player, more than Nadal or Djokovic or Federer or Murray, just to make it to this level. And he's had to show a lot of resilience over the years and a tough spine in many cases. But I've been following him since he was 17, and I've been to Serbia, where he's from, interviewed his childhood coaches. This is a very sensitive guy. He's smart, doesn't make always good decisions, as we know, but I think he's got a pretty serious brain power in a lot of ways, and he's a sensitive soul, and this has got to affect you. I mean, basically, he's a tennis player. He didn't get vaccinated. There are other people around the world in that situation, and he really is right now in a lot of quarters a global villain, and that's got to be very hard to digest for him. He's got to feel that, and yes, he's used to coming through adversity, but this, I was describing it in my New York Times column today. It's a bit like boxing, you know? How many body blows can you take before there's some long-term damage? And I just think he's taken a lot of body blows now, and he's bounced back, but he's not so young anymore. And this situation could be very demoralizing. So we'll see. I mean, it'll be fascinating to watch.
It will. How do his peers look at him? I read an article in The Age, Paul McNamee, who was the tournament director, as you know, here at the Australian Open, former Grand Slam doubles superstar, said that he's popular in the locker room. Is that correct?
I think that is. I mean, I wouldn't say the top players feel that way about him. I know he has rubbed some of those elite players the wrong way by sort of his strong-willed approaches on some of the ATP tennis tour issues. Obviously, he's a threat to all of them in terms of how dominant he can be. I think there's some personality conflicts there. But overall, the whole locker room, all the way down the rankings, those guys recognize that Novak has acted generously toward them in many instances. Have gone out of his way, used his energy, which a lot of top players in the past would not have done, to try to change their conditions of their work, get them some more prize money. And he's been part of this new player organization that started called the PTPA. And I think that's all legit. And I think they do feel like he's on their side in a way that a lot of number one players wouldn't be in the past, even though Federer and Nadal have worked hard for those sorts of things too. They haven't put as much on the line maybe as Novak has. So I think there is a lot of truth to that. But also I think the way he's acted here, a lot of players recognize that it wasn't good for the sport. And in a lot of ways, just pulled all the attention and oxygen out of the room, you know, for the last 2 weeks, even longer, because this goes back, this issue of Australian vaccination goes back months.
Talking to Christopher Cleary, writer for the New York Times. Christopher, before I let you go, how much does it knock this tournament around, the kerfuffle that's happened in the lead-up? Craig Tiley and the Australian Open from an international perspective.
Look, Dwayne, I think all of us in sports, and you know this better than I do, man, I think we all have recency bias in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And I feel like because so much news is going to be made on the court here in the next 2 weeks, I mean, as crazy as it sounds right now in the moment, I think people are going to move on pretty quickly, at least here in Australia. I think people are going to get into what's happening in the tournament, the players who are here, Nadal, new generations, Zverev, Medvedev, Carlos Alcaraz, a young Spaniard who just won out today in the first round. Looks so exciting. All this stuff going on, Ash Barty. So I think we're going to move on pretty fast. But the impact on the sport, if Novak can't recover from this, will be serious and lasting.
So you think it will knock television ratings for the great sport of tennis around worldwide if the world number one doesn't play in the next three Grand Slams or at least misses two of the next three?
Yeah, you know what? Obviously, those big rivalries, Novak versus Rafa, Novak versus Federer, which we haven't seen in a while because of Roger's injury, those are huge ratings drivers for tennis. No matter what, when those aren't around, you're going to lose something for sure. Mm. And obviously, Medvedev versus Zverev in the final of the Aussie Open isn't going to be as exciting for people and much of a magnet as those big three matchups are going to be. That's inevitable. So you're right in that sense, but I just mean in terms of the focus on the tournament itself day to day. I think people are going to move on pretty quickly.
And before I let you go, also, you've written a book. You've been a great historian over the course of time, charting the development, the evolution of tennis. Is the Davis Cup cooked?
It's such a sad thing to me, especially being here in Australia, knowing what that event has meant to this country over the years. And I got to be honest with you, I've been covering tennis for, what, over 30 years now? And I've written some books about Davis Cup in the past. I just did a big book about Federer and the Big Three. Just came out in Australia last year. But, I mean, I spent a lot of time watching Davis Cup and caring about it. And it really, it makes me sad to see what's happening. It is becoming irrelevant. And unless they change something, it's really hard for me to see it having any traction in the years to come.
Christopher, great to have you. I really appreciate you picking up the phone and having a chat to give us an international perspective on what's been a story that's bubbled and balled over the course of the last couple of months, to the point that Novak Djokovic is probably just getting off the plane home now. Great to have you, and thanks for your time.
Hey, Dwayne, my pleasure. Let me just say it's great to be back in Melbourne, though. We've missed it the last couple of years, and it's a...
Yeah, the Rod Laver Arena. Well, this whole precinct now is amazing. If you haven't been to the Australian Open for a while, by the way, it is phenomenal how beautiful a development it is and the amount of different things you can do around here. But that's for another time. We'll talk about that a little later. Christopher Clary from the New York Times.